Football Weekly is on the air.
Stafford play action fake, wants to throw. Looks deep middle. Got Shepherd at the 10. Shepherd at the 5. And Shepherd into the end zone. Touchdown Detroit Lions.
Grossman of a shotgun, 4th and 3 at the Arizona 18. Rex looking, going to the end zone, looking for Moss. It's a touchdown! Touchdown, Santana Moss!
2nd and 3, Bills at the open 43. The snap, they give it to Fred Jackson, finds room at the 35-30. Fred Jackson, 25-20. He headed to the end zone, 10-yard line, 5-yard line. Touchdown! Touchdown, Fred Jackson! What a run! Unbelievable 43-yard run for Fred Jackson.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, big week, week 3 of the NFL season, Packers, Bears, Cowboys, Redskins.
Can Jack Del Rio become the first NFL coach to have the bubble burst under him this year in Jacksonville? And how much longer can John Schneider, the GM, and the head coach Pete Carroll coexist in Seattle?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the publisher of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. We begin this week with Associate Editor Arthur Arkush. Down at Jacksonville, a lot of trouble going on down there. Jack Del Rio, Arthur, by my count, has gone through, I don't know, if you want to count the cutting of David Garrard right after training camp. He's gone through about 3 quarterbacks now. Give us an update. What's going on down there, and is his job in jeopardy?
I would say Jack Del Rio is very much on the hot seat. As you mentioned, he has now gone through his 3rd quarterback in less than 3 weeks, having named Blaine Gabbert the starter after a very rough start to the season, and particularly in week 2 for Luke McCown with the 4 picks. So Del Rio has thrown all the eggs in the rookie's basket, and we'll see where it goes from here. What's interesting about the situation is that when Garrard was released just days before the start of the season, Del Rio named, of course, McCown, not Gabbert, the starter, saying that Gabbert simply wasn't ready. So it doesn't really reflect very well on Del Rio less than 3 weeks later that suddenly Gabbert is ready now that McCown's had one bad game. It's a pretty ugly situation down there.
Well, and Arthur, Jack Del Rio has been on the bubble for about 3 years now, and somehow he survived. He got a big contract extension a couple of years ago that made him too expensive to let go. And there's never been much conversation about the relationship between him and GM Gene Smith, who just took over a couple years ago. It's always been more perceived, what's the owner, Wayne Weaver, going to do? Does Smith have the authority, as far as you know, to make a coaching change, or is this pretty much between the owner and the coach?
Well, I'm actually not quite sure if Gene Smith does have the authority to fire Del Rio on his own. I can tell you that the two have not exactly seen eye to eye on a lot of issues. Obviously, Del Rio not a Gene Smith guy, so whether that decision will ultimately come down to Weaver or Smith remains to be seen. But we do know that, again, his job security is tenuous at this point. And, you know, again, he's really reliant on Gabbert to come in and light it on fire, kind of as Cam Newton has done in Carolina.
All right, thank you very much, Arthur. Associate Editor Dan Parr joins us. Much talk in Chicago as the Bears get set to take on the Green Bay Packers. One-on-one with Mike Martz, who's under the gun, play-calling the question, Dan. What did he tell you about what they're going to do with perhaps their most consistent offensive weapon, and that's running back Matt Forte?
Yeah, Martz has been at the center of the scrutiny on the Bears this week after they had 52 passing plays and 11 running plays against the Saints in week 2. Asked him, what is the ideal number of carries or touches for Matt Forte in any given week? And his answer was, we have to get him the ball. Not that our goal is. We have to get him the ball, whether it's handing it off or throwing it to him 20 times in a game. So he's put that number out there, and now fans can hold him to that number in any given week. Forte's been outstanding thus far. He's accounted for 52% of the Bears' total yardage through the first 2 games.
You know, Dan, knowing Martz's disdain for pretty much anybody else's opinion but his own, is it possible that that 20 number is used because it actually, he did get 20 touches against New Orleans. It was just a lot of dump-off passes over the middle.
Right, and he's also said it could be as low as 17, and he also pointed out that, you know, pretty good memory from Mike Martz. He said back in 1999, he recalled Marshall Faulk having a game where he carried the ball 6 or 7 times in the Rams ended up blowing out the Bengals or somebody 42-7. So he did stick that in at the end there that, you know, it just depends on how the game's going, how many plays there are in a game. I think we could see Forte's touches vary quite a bit over the course of the season.
Well, and very quickly, Dana, because I know you talked to Forte as well, and his contract status has been a huge controversy in Chicago. He wants a new deal. He's in the last year of his rookie deal. He's only making $600,000 this year. He represents half the Bears' offense. Any sense of frustration with Forte about the lack of negotiations there?
He's absolutely frustrated. You know, Matt Forte is a very soft-spoken, calm, and cool guy, but he feels like he's an elite back, and his quote to me was, obviously somebody doesn't believe I'm an elite back, so that somebody is Jerry Angelo, and they had talks in the preseason training camp with him and Forte's agent about getting something done. Nothing happened. Now, with this great start Forte's off to, the frustration's only building, and he wants to get that new deal, and he said he's heard nothing to lead him believe that anything is close to happening on that front.
Dan, another one of your teams, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Interesting situation with safety Tanard Jackson. Suspended indefinitely a year ago for a third violation of the league's substance policy. A suspension has to last for at least a year. He's now eligible to be reinstated, but the question is, will he be?
Well, we're not sure what the status is, but, you know, getting a chance to hear from Greg Aiello, league spokesman, just pointed out that, you know, this is an indefinite suspension. While he is eligible to file for reinstatement starting September 22nd, the one-year marker, and that's only the minimum that suspension can go for. And I think it appears it's going to continue. Bottom line is the Bucs are going to be without a pretty good free safety, I think, for at least a good amount of time, longer than what you would have maybe presumed a year ago.
Associate Editor Dan Parr on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers back with more Way We Hear It when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. We continue with The Way We Hear It and are joined by executive editor Dan Arkush. Dan, up in Seattle, I don't know how the Seahawks could be off to any worse start than they are. They've looked real bad in going 0-2 out of the gate. The Pete Carroll, John Schneider front office arrangement. Schneider's the personnel guy. Of course, Carroll is the coach with unlimited powers, it seems like, in that scenario. What's their situation like now off this shaky start?
Well, Wayne, we're starting to hear rumblings that this alliance could be on somewhat shaky ground. I mean, at the very least, there can't help but be major concern and frustration over how terrible many of these moves that Schneider orchestrated look so far. I mean, starting with Tavares Jackson, he's looked really tentative under center. Sidney Rice has yet to play. He might play for the first time this Sunday. So they've got nothing out of him. Zach Miller has been resigned to being a blocker because of the offensive line problems. And Robert Gallery has been hurt more often than not, and when he's been on the field, he hasn't looked good at all. So these are pretty damning indictments right there.
You know, Dan, I'm curious. My understanding is that Pete Carroll is the grand poobah in Seattle, and I'm sure he had a stamp on John Schneider getting the GM job. Does Paul Allen, the owner, figure into this, or is this a situation where you better keep Carroll happy or you better be looking over your shoulder?
Yeah, I would have to say if there's a power struggle, Schneider definitely is going to lose out on this one. I mean, as to how Paul Allen figures in this scheme, you know, he's sort of a mystery owner. And so I really couldn't say, but I really think that if they don't win this week, I mean, last year they had a real bad loss in week two, and they bounced back with an upset over San Diego. They need that badly this week, guys, against an Arizona team that they handled handily last year twice.
Thank you very much, Dan. Senior editor Eric Edholm joins us. Big week, Cowboys, Redskins this week in the Monday night game. Tony Romo, the quarterback of the Cowboys, played through a rib injury, pretty serious rib injury. And D'Angelo Hall, the Redskins defensive back, says he'll target those ribs this week. Tell us about it, Eric.
Yeah, on the first hand, Romo, I mean, it's crazy that you know, the guy gets completely shredded for his performance in week one despite playing well for a lot of that game. And then doesn't probably get the credit he deserves for suffering the broken rib and the punctured lung in that overtime win, the comeback win over the 49ers. So he deserves a lot of the credit. He's probably going to give it a go this weekend and play hurt, wearing a flak jacket. But that didn't stop Hall from saying, hey, look, I'm going to target that area just like I'm going to target, you know, Felix Jones's shoulder if he plays. And probably could have chosen some better words, a better approach to this whole thing. But, you know, this is certainly something that the players are going to keep an eye on.
Yeah, Eric, I mean, I'm told that the results of D'Angelo Hall's IQ tests have been lost in the mail for 30 years because nobody would believe it. Any comment from Mike Shanahan or Jim Haslett on this? I mean, what a stupid thing to say.
Yeah, they're kind of toeing the line and playing the politically correct role here. And it was just one of those things. And Hall's been off to a nice start. I know he gave up that bomb to Fitzgerald on Sunday, but he's had a good few games. And yet you're expecting this kind of thing from him. He said some stupid things over the years in Atlanta. He said some stupid things in his brief time in Oakland. And he said some dumb things here in Washington, too. But he is playing well, and so I think the coaches are just sort of shaking their head and trying to move on as best they can.
Eric, what do you know about the Mike Kafka, Mike Vick situation at quarterback for the Eagles this week? Is Vick definitely out, or is there a chance he could play?
Yeah, there's a strong chance, Wayne, he will play. I will remind people, look back to last year and look at Jay Cutler, a guy who, coming off that Giants game, the Monday nighter, all signs pointed to him playing at Carolina. Well, at the last minute, they had to make a switch, and Todd Collins had to start. That certainly could happen with Vick this week, and all signs are trending in a positive direction regarding his concussion. The tests are coming back in good form, but again, there could be a last-minute thing. If there is some sort of change of status, they're going to try to get Vince Young ready as the backup, but Mike Kafka is a kid they really, really like, and they've got a package of plays they think can absolutely work with him. He looked good in relief of Vic on Sunday night.
Eric, real quickly, because Wayne and I were talking about this off the air, Vince Young's been banged up. When you say try to get him ready, are we saying trying to get him healthy, or is he actually behind Kafka as the number three quarterback on this team?
Well, health is the issue right now with the hamstring he suffered in the preseason finale, but there were some rumblings that Kafka was ahead of Young in the preseason at one point before the injury. So, hey, I'm just saying right now, I think Kafka would be their guy either way.
All right, Eric. Thank you very much. Eric at home on the Philadelphia Eagles situation. Senior editor Mike Wilkening joins us. Cincinnati Bengals, they've been off the police blotter most of this year, and now it looks like they're back on. Wide receiver Jerome Simpson, offensive tackle Anthony Collins reportedly find themselves in the middle of at least a controversial incident. 2.5 pounds of marijuana delivered to Simpson's home on Tuesday. Tell us about it.
Yeah, according to published reports, a package delivered to Simpson's house allegedly containing marijuana. Anthony Collins was there, but this is Simpson's home, reportedly. Authorities searched the house and found 6 more pounds of marijuana. So again, as we tape right now, no charges have been filed, nothing along those lines yet. But again, at the least, something where Simpson and Collins kind of find themselves in the middle of this controversy.
And Mike, very quickly, as our understanding is that by Wednesday, Collins was still at practice, all was fine. Simpson was not at practice, and apparently Simpson's Twitter account is down now.
His account is down. Both players practiced on Wednesday. We don't know kind of what the situation with regards to the both players on Thursday, but what we have at the very least is the makings of a controversy.
Yeah, Wayne, I mean, it's one thing to say it was for recreational use, but when you find 8.5 pounds of marijuana, I think Mr. Simpson's got some splaining to do.
You're not buying the medical aspect either?
No, I don't think it was medicinal purposes.
Okay. That's a lot of pot, I want to tell you. The games are coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush in the NFL this weekend. You know, the Detroit Lions are rolling, Hub, with a healthy Matthew Stafford at quarterback and a physical defense. They hammered Kansas City 48-3 last week. What I don't really know is that a commentary on how good the Lions are or how bad the Chiefs are? I suspect it's a little bit of both. Fact is, the Lions were not sharp when they came out, and they still plowed a 2010 playoff team, the Kansas City Chiefs. This week, the Lions on the road at Minnesota. They face the 0-2 Vikings. One would figure the Vikings are at least a decent 0-2 team. After all, they led at San Diego in week one, had a 17-0 advantage at home against Tampa Bay last week, but they lost both games. This is not the same Williams-Wall Minnesota defense. They surrendered 273 second-half yards in falling to the Bucks 24-20 last week in their home opener. One area the Vikes will probe. The Lion run defense gave up 150 yards to Kansas City. Adrian Peterson is still one of the top ground threats in the game, coming off a 120-yard performance in week two. The Vikings haven't lost to Detroit at home since 1997. But one gets the feeling the Lions are going in with momentum and playing the role of favorites, or so it appears. One of the most talked about 0-2 teams in the league, the Carolina Panthers, and their red-hot quarterback Cam Newton play host to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Newton has exceeded 400 yards passing in back-to-back starts, his first two career starts in the NFL.
Now, Hub, I want you to listen to this really closely. He has posted ridiculous numbers. 854 passing yards in his first two games. Most ever for a rookie in his first two games. Previous record holder? Todd Marinovich. I would figure Newton has a little bit better future than Todd Marinovich had when he posted those numbers. Jaguars and Panthers, we talked about the Jaguars in the way we hear it. Lots of controversy going on with them. The Panthers playing at home looking for their first win of the season.
There you go. Wayne found a way to slow the Cam Newton bandwagon, throw Todd Marinovich out there. We'll see what happens.
Stunned you, didn't it?
Yeah, how about the San Francisco 49ers and the Cincinnati Bengals, Wayne? You know, Jimmy Harbaugh takes over in Frisco, and everybody says, well, they'll play offense, but what about the defense? The Niners, after 2 weeks, 31st in total offense, just 29th throwing the football, but they're first against the run. They're playing pretty good defense, and you've got a Cincinnati Bengal team that is trying to figure out, well, just who exactly they are. They were pretty good on the road against Cleveland, not so good when they went to Denver. Now you've got a situation where Andy Dalton's okay. He's got a 105.7 quarterback rating in two starts. Cedric Benson's going to try and run the football. The 49ers are playing great run defense. This one is going to be two teams trying to fix their weaknesses. Can the Bengals get a little bit better, you know, as far as throwing the ball consistently and playing good defense, and the 49ers have got to find some offense if they're going to get things turned there. Another really interesting game to take a look at is you got the Miami Dolphins going to Cleveland. Now, these guys just met a year ago, and Cleveland went down to Miami and beat the Dolphins 13-10. They picked off Chad Henne three times. Henne's been pretty good in the first couple games, and he's getting some help. Daniel Thomas got a debut last week. He missed the first game, and last week put up 107 yards on the ground. Brandon Marshall's doing his part, 13 catches for 218 yards. But again, a team you thought they'd struggle on offense and be good on defense. The Dolphins are 22nd versus the run, 30th versus the pass, and 28th in points allowed. The Cleveland Browns, well, they're not a great team to take advantage of that. You got Colt McCoy has been okay after a really good preseason. They had a great second half in Indianapolis, Wayne, but really struggled week one against the Bengals, and really here are two teams just trying to find themselves.
Yeah, sounds like it. Couple of 1-1 teams get together in Nashville this weekend as the Denver Broncos visit the Tennessee Titans. New coach Mike Munchak's Titans put together a great all-around effort to defeat the heavily favored Ravens last week, 26-13. Denver comes in off a shorthanded 24-22 win at the expense of Cincinnati. Broncos were without wide receiver Brandon Lloyd, defensive end Elvis Dumervil, running back No'Shawn Marino, and cornerback Champ Bailey due to injuries. Their status for this week, well worth checking. John Fox Broncos have a good-looking young linebacker. We all liked him coming out in the draft, Von Miller, and he's made an impact in each of the first two games. Meanwhile, the Titans Pro Bowl running back Chris Johnson, who got the big contract during training camp, he's getting just 2.3 yards per carry so far this season. They must get him on track. The most disappointing team, perhaps the most disappointing team of the NFL this early season, has to be Kansas City. The Chiefs, a playoff team a year ago, have been blown out twice in losses to Buffalo and at Detroit. This week they travel to San Diego, where the 1-1 Chargers await. Now the Chiefs are without all-pro safety Eric Berry and running back Jamal Charles for the rest of the season. They're done due to injuries. Chargers quarterback Phillip Rivers has to be licking his chops. The Chiefs secondary's been ripped apart by lesser talents than his already this season. He also has a big target downfield in wide receiver Vincent Jackson, who had 10 catches, 172 yards at New England last week. Keep an eye on tight end Antonio Gates, who was held without a reception last week and targeted just once. No question, Rivers will get him involved in this game against the secondary without its best safety, Hub.
Wayne, I'm going to give you most disappointing with the Chiefs if you give me most confusing with the Baltimore Ravens, who are going to visit the St. Louis Rams. So impressive on opening day at home against the Steelers. And then they went to Tennessee and just laid an egg. They stunk it up. They let the Titans, of all teams, who aren't getting anything from Chris Johnson, still score on six of their last seven possessions. Joe Flacco followed up his good debut with a two-pick performance, and Ray Rice was held to 43 yards on the ground. Very, very disappointing. And yet you've got the St. Louis Rams, such high hopes for the year. They're so banged up. They're 0-2. Don't know about Steven Jackson, about right tackle Jason Smith. Both their cornerbacks are hurt. Bradford played, but he appears to be bothered a little bit by that sore hand. They are at home, and the Rams are desperate for a win here. This is actually a fascinating ball game to watch, because if Baltimore loses another one, well, their stock is going to go right through the floor, and St. Louis just cannot afford to be 0-3. Now, we've got the New York Jets going to Oakland. Is anybody old enough out there to remember Heidi? Everybody talks about the Heidi game when these two get together. And the way the Raiders played last week, who knows? They were up 35-21, found a way to lose 38-35 to the Buffalo Bills, and the Jets would like to think they can bring a lot more offense than that. The Jets are 2-0. They were very impressive over Jacksonville last week after struggling to get by the Dallas Cowboys in their opener. We know about these teams that travel coast to coast. It hasn't been as bad going east to west. The Jets are the better football team here, but boy, they better strap it on because the Raiders are going to try and run the football, and that's a part of the Jets defense, Wayne, that hasn't really been challenged yet.
Yeah, no question about it. Now the Arizona Cardinals 1-1 take on defending NFC West Division champion Seattle, who comes in at 0-2. We talked about the Seahawks problems and the way we hear it. Hawks have been terrible, beaten 33-17 at San Francisco week one, shut out by the Steelers 24-0 at Pittsburgh. They do expect to get wide receiver Sidney Rice into the lineup for the first time this season. He sat out the first two games due to a shoulder injury. Arizona wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald, 7 catches, a buck 33 and a touchdown at Washington, continues to click with new quarterback Kevin Cobb. One would figure the Cardinals, even though they're playing on opposite coasts in consecutive weeks, will have enough offense to be the offensively challenged Seahawks.
Man, we talked about Dallas at Washington and the way we hear it. Just one other thought. You know, yeah, the Cowboys are all banged up on offense, and D'Angelo Hall is saying stupid things on defense. But this is really about the Cowboys defense and Rex Grossman. It's been good Rex so far. He hasn't seen anything like DeMarcus Ware in his first couple starts. Can they travel well to Dallas? They certainly get the Cowboys at the right time. This is a great rivalry game. If the Redskins can get this one at 3-0, I think people start believing in them. On the other hand, if the Cowboys can turn the tables, they just put themselves in a tie in the NFC East. This should be a fun one to keep an eye on.
Stay tuned. We've got the big games coming up next on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrivee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. Well, Hub, Giants-Eagles, 1-1 Giants, 1-1 Eagles, both bruised and battered in more ways than one. Giants got by the Rams last Monday night at home. The Eagles were Sunday night losers at Atlanta, and what we all knew for them was just a bad spot going into Atlanta, the Falcons coming off a big loss on opening day to the Bears. This is one of those early season divisional tests both ways. We talked about the Michael Vick situation in the way we hear it. That's a big part of this equation in this game.
Well, it is, and Vick is going to be the focus, but the bottom line is that the Eagles always have their backup quarterback ready. They like Mike Kafka, and they're going to be okay either way. What's interesting is it challenges Tom Coughlin to do two game plans because the Eagles' offense under Mike Vick is going to look very different than it would under Mike Kafka. But the bigger problem for the Giants is injuries. Now they lose Dominic Hickson for the second straight year with an ACL tear. They got Mario Manningham banged up at wide receiver. Giants have gotten as many injuries as any team in the NFL, and they're going to be a mash unit going into Philadelphia this weekend, and the question is, can they overcome that?
The injury-depleted Kansas City Chiefs take their 0-2 record to San Diego for an AFC West get-together with the Chargers. Mike Costa has the report.
The San Diego Chargers are still reeling from a loss last week in New England, in which they shot themselves in the foot over and over again. At 1-1, yes, the season is still young, but it's games like last week's that afford you the opportunity to take the next step. Head coach Norv Turner says getting rid of the blunders like last week's is paramount with the Chiefs.
Obviously, as I said after the game, we didn't play well enough to go into New England and win that football game. That's an outstanding football team. The thing that jumps out at people are the glaring mistakes, obviously the turnovers, which we have to fix.
Turner says his football team should not be judged on only two games.
There's a lot going to happen between now and December. You know, I'm not going to jump to any conclusions off of one game. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure we get better and we take care of the things we need to take care of.
Chiefs head coach Todd Haley has had a rough go of it in the first two games of 2011. His team has been battered by the Bills and the Lions, and this football franchise desperately needs a win. Haley said it's very clear what this team needs to do to turn their season around.
We've got to stop doing some of those things. We've got to play smarter. We've got to protect the football. We've got to make plays when there's opportunity to make plays. And if we don't do those things, you know, we'll have a hard time changing the result.
With a look at the Chiefs and the Chargers in San Diego, I'm Mike Costa for Pro Football Weekly.
All right, thanks very much, Mike. Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh Steelers head to Indianapolis for a Sunday night meeting with the Peyton Manningless Colts. Derek Schultz has more.
What was originally scheduled to be a primetime early season matchup between AFC title contenders is now being viewed as anything but. The winless Colts, fresh off a home loss to Cleveland, limp into Sunday night's matchup with Pittsburgh at 0-2 for the first time since 1998. The Colts were 3-13 that year, Peyton Manning's rookie season, and will have to turn things around quickly to avoid a similar fate in 2011. Despite seeing some positives in the loss to the Browns, Colts head coach Jim Caldwell knows that it comes down to winning and losing.
Our record's not pretty right now, obviously, but it's not the end either. I mean, we got a lot of work to do, and we just got to keep pounding at it. I think you can look at a number of things and say, yeah, we're getting a little bit better, but the bottom line is winning is the key.
Indy's offense has become anemic without Peyton Manning, mustering just two touchdowns, both coming late in losses to Houston and Cleveland when the game had already been decided. Their third down conversion rate, an area where they've generally been one of the top teams in the NFL for years, has plummeted to 21.7%, good for second worst in the entire league. The same could be said about their red zone offense, which failed repeatedly last week against the Browns. However, center Jeff Saturday staying optimistic, saying that the Colts can take some things from the first 2 weeks to build on.
From our standpoint, it's a long season. We got to keep working every week. We have to continue to get better. You know, from week one to week two, we definitely got to get better. From week two to week three, and keep growing on what we are doing well, kind of define our team for what it's going to be and how we're going to find ways to win and finally get a victory.
The Colts and Steelers have not met often in recent years, but have had some great battles when they've locked horns. In the last regular season meeting between the two teams, the Colts rallied for a late score to win 24-20 at Heinz Field, helping them turn around a poor start en route to a 12-win campaign in 2008. Before that, Pittsburgh scored a huge upset in the AFC divisional round at the old RCA Dome in January of 2006, the second step in their Super Bowl march in that 2005 season. It may be wishful thinking to hope for a close one when Pittsburgh and Indy meet on Sunday. Vegas has already cemented the Steelers as a 10.5-point road favorite. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Derek Schultz.
Thank you very much, Derek. Analysis of more top games coming up after these messages. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Along with Hub Arkush, I'm Wayne Larrabee. We resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL. The New England Patriots are 2-0. That's to be expected at this point in the season. The Buffalo Bills, they're 2-0. And Hub, that's the unexpected aspect of this equation. But the Bills, along with the Lions, are two of the surprise stories of the early season after hammering Kansas City and then surviving a visit for the Oakland Raiders. Now, we know the Pats are good. We're going to find out how good the Bills are, aren't we, this weekend?
Yeah, we are. And Wayne, there's no question that Buffalo's offense is good, interesting. I don't know if it's great. Chan Gailey knows what he's doing, and Ryan Fitzpatrick appears to be the guy to run it. The question is the Buffalo defense. They gave up 35 points to Oakland. Now you got the Patriots coming in, and we know what the Patriots can do. One of the things that you got to look at in New England, though, is the injuries are really mounting. Center Dan Coppin, they had hoped would be back in 8-10 weeks. He's now done for the year with that broken ankle. Safety Patrick Chung, a key to their run defense, had thumb surgery, I believe, Wednesday of this week. He's going to try and go versus Buffalo, but they're not sure. And Aaron Hernandez, half of that young tight end package, has a torn MCL. He's going to miss at least a couple weeks. So Patriots come in explosive, but also really banged up.
All right, Hub. The New Orleans Saints got back on track last week, and this week they host the 2-0 Houston Texans. We get the preview from Gus Kattengill.
It's a game of mirror images on Sunday as the 1-1 Saints host the 2-0 Texans. Many drawing comparisons between Houston and the 2009 New Orleans team. Both have high-powered offenses and received facelifts on defense by adding a respected defensive coordinator. It was Greg Williams for the Saints back in 2009, Wade Phillips this season for the Texans. Saints quarterback Drew Brees can see how you can compare the two.
Anytime I think there's struggles and then you make a change, I think there's this renewed enthusiasm and, you know, feeling like, you know, could this be the missing link? And Wade has a great reputation as a defensive coordinator and a lot of respect, especially from quarterbacks, guys like me, because I've played against him another time, practiced against him every day for 3 years in San Diego. So I know the type of coordinator he is and the attitude that he brings, you know, with his guys and the scheme, and, you know, they play hard for him. I think that you see that You see that renewed enthusiasm and that confidence now on the defensive side of the ball that maybe hasn't been there in the past.
Back in the preseason, Houston defeated the Saints 27-14. It's a game players this week in the Saints locker room called ugly when rewatching that film. It's also a game in team NFC Defensive Player of the Week safety Roman Harper knows too well.
We do know these guys. We practice against Shab and Andre and all those guys and Adrian, Aaron Foster. And we've seen all their linemen. They've had the same starting lineup that they had last year. And we practiced against them last year for a week, and we saw them again this preseason, and they really got after. So we got some things to prove. We got some things that we needed to correct from that game, and hopefully I'll put a good product out there Sunday.
The Saints also get an added boost as defensive tackle Tom Johnson, who's missed the last 5 weeks with a calf injury, should be back. Defensive end Will Smith will be back from suspension. Smith happy, of course, to be playing again and gives what he thinks will be the key for the Saints defense on Sunday.
Stop the run. You know, without stopping the run, you know, it's going to be tough for us to stop Shab. If we can make a one-dimensional and force those guys just to throw, we'll probably be good. But if we can't stop the run, we'll be in trouble.
Gus Kattengell for Pro Football Weekly.
All right, thanks, Gus. The Atlanta Falcons come in 1-1 off a hard-fought victory at home over the Philadelphia Eagles last Sunday night. This week, they head to Tampa Bay, where the Buccaneers, a 10-win team a year ago, is 0-2. Jerry Petock reports.
Last season, the Falcons took both games against their divisional rival, but both games were also determined in the final possession of each game. Atlanta comes into the Tampa Bay area riding high off of a 35-31 victory in primetime over Michael Vick and the Philadelphia Eagles that saw Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan toss a career-high 4 touchdown passes. More importantly, though, for this game, Michael Turner rushed for 114 yards and a touchdown last week. That will be key for the Atlanta Falcons this week. The Bucs' run defense has been suspect over the last season or two. They've been far from impressive, so Turner will definitely have his opportunities to run, and he'll have to capitalize on them for the Falcons to be victorious. On the Buccaneers' side of the ball, Josh Freeman led his team to his 8th career comeback win as the Bucs bumped off the Detroit Lions 24-20. Freeman ended the game 22-31 for 243 yards and a touchdown. One of the big stories, though, coming out of that game was little-known wide receiver Preston Parker, who stepped in for the injured Sammy Strader. Parker caught 6 passes for 98 yards. Buccaneers head coach Raheem Morris coined the term youngry for his team because they're young and hungry, and they're a team that totally believes in their quarterback, Josh Freeman. Now, Coach Freeman, his 8th career comeback, how does this kid stay so poised under so much pressure?
He's smart. Listen to his coaching. He takes coaching well. He's cool. He's calm. He's poised. And that's when he plays his best. Yesterday, 17-0. He was as cool and as calm as he's been. He's on the sideline getting everything corrected. We need to get corrected. Came over there one time, his mouth bleeding. Looked me right in the face. Oh, we got this. We're okay. And I'm looking at my quarterback's mouth bleeding. It's kind of a situation you don't want to look at too often. But he got things rolling for us and was able to, you know, come back again in the fourth quarter. And it's becoming a signature move for him.
It's the Falcons and the Buccaneers at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. Sunday afternoon kickoff is at 4:15. I'm Jerry Petock for Pro Football Weekly.
Thanks a lot, Jerry. Stay tuned. The headliner on Pro Football Weekly is up next. The Headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. It is the 183rd meeting of the Bears and Packers, this one at Soldier Field in Chicago. Greg Matzik has the story.
The NFL's oldest rivalry continues this Sunday as the 2-0 Green Bay Packers and 1-1 Chicago Bears meet for the 183rd time. Sunday's late afternoon matchup will take place at Soldier Field, the place Green Bay ended Chicago's season a year ago in the NFC Championship game. The Bears enter Sunday's matchup in a familiar position, too. Outstanding defense and special teams grouped with an offense that has allowed more quarterback sacks than any team in the league. Offensive coordinator Mike Martz dialed up 52 pass plays and just 11 running plays in the Bears' 30-13 loss to the Saints last weekend. Cutler was sacked 6 times. Complicating matters will be the absence of rookie tackle Gabe Kareemi, who will miss multiple weeks after suffering a dislocated knee. Still, head coach Lovie Smith isn't as concerned with the pass-run balance so much as he is about getting into the end zone.
We want to score points is what we want to do. How we score points, that doesn't really matter an awful lot for us. I think most people would like to have some balance as much as you possibly can, but you get in every game and you see what you need to do to win that game.
Jay Cutler will lead the Chicago offense against a Green Bay pass defense that has allowed 851 passing yards through 2 weeks. They'll also be without the services of All-Pro safety Nick Collins, who will miss the remainder of the season due to a neck injury. But no one's been able to stop the Packers' offense thus far. They haven't skipped a beat from their Super Bowl season a year ago, scoring a whopping 72 points in just two games. Aaron Rodgers hopes the Packers don't stop themselves on Sunday with critical errors.
You look at the three games we played last year. The first game we had a lot of yards and about 17 penalties and took points off the board, and that's why we lost. In the second game, they made more mistakes than us, and we beat them 10-3. And in the third game, you know, we made enough plays to win. They made a few more mistakes than us. So it's kind of the team that makes the least amount of mistakes is going to win.
It's the Packers and Bears, Sunday afternoon from Chicago in the crisp fall air on questionable turf.
It's going to be a hell of a game. We're looking forward to it.
Thank you, Coach McCarthy. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Greg Mattson.
And Wayne, you know, I know it's cliche-ish as it gets, but the reality is you really can throw out everything in this rivalry. For whatever reason, it looks like the Bears wouldn't match up well with the Packers, but for the last 2-3 years, you look at how these rosters have been put together, these teams have played tight every game, and this one is going to be a war. It's fun when these two get together.
Well, no more than a touchdown has separated the two teams in the last 6 games, Hub. All defensive struggles in which the winner hasn't scored more than 21 points in any single game. So it should be a good one. Bears and Packers on the lakefront in Chicago. Time for the Handicapper's Corner, featuring our handicapping expert from the Phoenician in Las Vegas, Chuck Esposito.
And Chuck, it gets curiouser and curiouser, which I know is not a word, but I want to talk about this. I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs have got to be not just the biggest disappointment in the NFL this year, but in a long time. And you know, they handled the Chargers last year. Now they go into San Diego, a 2-touchdown dog?
Well, they are a huge disappointment, but you look at the injuries that they have. I mean, they lost their all-pro tight end. They lost Barry, their best defensive back. They lost Jamal Charles. It's just not the same team. Charlie Weiss isn't there any longer, and they're one of those teams right now. They've given up almost 100 points and scored less than 10 points. So they're struggling on both sides of the ball.
When you look at games like Philadelphia and the Giants with the Vic question and Dallas and the Redskins with the Romo question, How do the books out in Vegas decide when these games go off the board, when they go on the board, and what do you have to know to be comfortable to have a game up?
Well, we want to have as much information as we possibly can when we put a game on the board. And when you don't know, especially about a quarterback, the game's going to be limited or in a circle, which means that we'll have it on the board, but we'll take a little bit less action or less limits on the game. As soon as we know if a guy's in or out, it makes our life a lot easier because we're then handicapping, knowing exactly who's playing. But when they're questionable, it's a little difficult from our end, but the betting public is trying to figure out their status as well. So a lot of homework's involved and a lot of research as we look to move that number accordingly.
Chuck Esposito from the Phoenician in Las Vegas in the Handicapper's Corner. Stay tuned. Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Well, Wayne, just when you thought rules in the NFL might have gone a little too far as we try and figure out what's legal and what's not when it comes to violence and contact on NFL football fields, the league office seems to come up with something else they want to legislate this week that I'm just not sure where they're going with this. According to our sources, an internal league memo went from Roger Goodell's office to the 32 teams warning them that players faking injuries during a game to stop the clock will not be tolerated, will not be accepted, and will be dealt with seriously. Now, there was no specific fines mentioned in the memo, but our understanding is that the commissioner is letting the teams know it could be fines, it could be even lost draft choices, that they're very serious about not wanting teams bending the rules this way. But here's my question. Are they going to put an internist on every sideline, maybe an orthopedic guy to go with them, and maybe just a psychiatrist? Because who decides if a guy's faking an injury or not? I mean, what if you throw a flag, decide, hey, that they can't do that, they're just trying to stop the clock, and it turns out the next day the guy's got a broken leg? I mean, I understand, you know, why they're a little concerned about it, and I agree it would be a nice thing to stop if they could. I just don't understand how they think they're going to do it. Maybe what we need to do is create the Academy Awards of the NFL, and if you don't get a Best Actor Award, you get a flag.
All right, Hub, thanks very much. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Lions, Bills, and Redskins radio networks. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.